another episode of The Private Record. We got a banger for you today. It is a medical disaster story. This dude, our guest, Kirby, his name's Kirby. Who in the world is named Kirby besides Kirby Puckett? Only one guy, apparently. And it's our guest on this episode. That alone is reason to watch or listen. But Kirby had at first it was a medical mystery, and then it was a medical disaster, and then he just straight up almost died numerous times. All of this during COVID, which as anyone who was around during that period knows, that was the worst time to get sick, to break a bone, to have any reason to go to the hospital. But Kirby had a very, very good reason to go to the hospital. I'll let him get into the details, but basically his stomach exploded like he was in the movie Alien. And that's not literally what happened, but it's basically what happened. And it's a really crazy story. Kirby, though, tells it with a lot of zest, a lot of pizzazz. He's a very likable guy. He's fun to listen to. His story, while it is very harrowing, he makes it kind of a fun story. It's weird. I don't know. Kirby's a great guy. But this one struck fear in my heart. I used to be a serious hypochondriac. I'm not anymore. But this one almost made me come back over that wall and join the hypochondria club. It's crazy. And it really is a testament to get checked out early if there's something really weird going on with your body. Okay? That's the only medical advice I'll ever give you guys. If something weird's going on in your body, don't be like, it's probably fine. It probably is fine, but it's best to know, get it checked out. Just find out if it's fine or not. Because you don't want to end up like Kirby. Okay, that's I'm going to let Kirby do the rest. If you want to be a guest on the show, go to theprivaterecord.com and submit yourself as a guest to be on the show. Looking forward to hearing from you. We get tons of submissions and we want more. We want to hear every good story anyone's ever had to tell. We want it on this show. We want thousands and thousands and thousands of episodes. I'll be doing this until I'm 85. I'm going to be doing this the day I die of old age, okay? That's how long I want to be doing this. But follow us on all socials at The Private Record, TikTok, Instagram. Of course, subscribe to our YouTube channel at The Private Record. Like this video, comment on this video, and please share this video with your friends, with your family, with strangers, with work people you know, with anyone you've ever seen in traffic, on the subway. It doesn't matter. Share with them because it would mean a lot to me. You mean a lot to me. I love you. Thank you so much for watching. Thank you so much for listening. Without you, this show would literally not exist. So thank you so much. I'll see you soon. Kirby, welcome to The Private Record. What we're going to do here just real quick is I would love for you to introduce yourself. And if you can, if you would be so kind, up front, what is the genre of this story? If you had to say what the genre of your story is, what would you label it as? So your name, and then tell us that, and then we can get into it.
Okay. Hello, my name is Kirby Fisher, and I would say the genre of this story is, it's definitely rooted in trauma, but it's kind of a phoenix from the ashes sort of situation, I suppose. I think that's
good.
Pretty much what I
All right. Say. We got Kirby with Phoenix from the Ashes story coming up right now. Let's get into it.
All right. So, I guess like it's a little bit of one of those sort of typical guy brain situations where, your body's sending you some sort of a warning sign, but you're like, oh, no, she's sweet, mate. Don't worry about it. So in Australia, where I grew up, sorry, you can hear sirens. I'm in Vancouver in the east side, and it's pretty brutal at the moment.
All good. Anyway, I love Vancouver. It's a good place to be.
Oh, right on. Yeah, man, I love it here. So, I got this like one day. So I had a bit of an addiction to Vegemite growing up, and every day after school, I'd call it a veg sesh, where I would just like load up on like six slices of toast and just go absolutely bloody willy-nilly on the veg sesh.
And let's explain to non-Australians what Vegemite is, because I know to you guys it's like butter here, but like people here are like, what the fuck is Vegemite? So go ahead and you explain.
And look, that's really very valid, and to be honest with you, still don't even fucking know entirely what it is. Apparently, it kind of derives from, it's like prisoner food. I mean, keep in mind where I'm from, it's convict nation. And more or less, it's just the yeast extract from like a bunch of nonsense and like vegetable shrapnel. And, you know, it was just kind of like, I think its original form was just kind of a paste made from shit laying around.
That's actually what they call it when they sell it. By Vegemite, a paste made from shit laying around.
I'll correct you there, my friend. That's actually what they say when they sell Marmite. See, Vegemite, they say five stars if you enjoy taste bud orgasms. But anyway, so here I am having a veg sesh.
Yeah.
And yeah, I had this really intense, sharp, stabbing pain in my stomach. I can't even put it in words. It felt like a knife went in, twisted, and went out. And the whole thing lasted about 3 seconds.
Whoa.
Okay. I kind of dropped to the ground. Got back up and was like, that was fucking weird. Guy brain, didn't think anything of it. Nothing happened for years. And then at about 25, the exact same thing. After the exact same situation. A few beers, go home. You guys down for a veg sesh? Yeah, fucking home. It's the fucking five-star taste bud situation. So we did that. Veg sesh out. And then shiklaki, sharp stabbing pain again. And this one really kind of scared me. But it was so like just out of nowhere and over and done with in 2 seconds. So stupidly, again, I forget about it. Mm-hmm. Now, fast forward about a decade or a little bit less, and I move over to Canada and I go to the bathroom and all of a sudden, sorry, viewers, there's blood in the bowl. Mm-hmm. And now I'm really scared. So I go straight to the doctor, obviously. I mean, that's blood you don't really mess around with.
Is there pain there or is that just the blood you're talking about?
No, at this stage, there's no pain at all.
Okay.
So it's just blood. But, you know, obviously enough of a cause for concern.
Yeah.
You go to the doctor, man, and like the doctor just kind of brushes it off. He's like, nah, that's probably just like IBS. So maybe just like, you know, increase your fiber intake.
Mm-hmm.
My mom was a pretty healthy person growing up. So I was kind of raised to like fiber was kind of in the forefront of our diet. So I didn't really feel, pardon the pun, but my gut was telling me that that's probably not accurate, but
I agree with
it. 2 days go by, same thing. And then it's more frequent. I go back to the doctor and this time I insist on going to like a gastrologist, like a specialist, which I do. And this is where the story takes a turn. So I go and meet this woman. Her name's Dr. Ty, and she, you know, man, look, this is the thing too. This has been the biggest realization. One of the biggest lessons I've had from this whole experience is when we go and book a hotel, we will do things like, oh, I wonder what the reviews are like, or if we're going to a restaurant, what are the reviews like? But we don't do it for probably the most important people that we should, i.e. somebody that's in charge of keeping you fucking alive still.
Yeah, it's true.
So I didn't look into it. You know, you walk in, you see plaques on the wall, and you're like, I think that's all I need to know.
Yeah, yeah.
So she does the exact same thing. Oh, it's just IBS. It's increased your fiber by a lot. So she's got me on this crazy fiber diet. Fast forward. I'm not getting better. I'm getting worse. And now I've got pain to match with the blood. And I'm starting to get more scared.
Yeah.
Around this stage, this is the beginning of 2020. It's about February. So the world is kind of starting to kind of get a glimpse of the impending doom that's on the horizon, but we're not quite there. But it's close. And I wake up one morning and my life has completely changed forever. And I sort of turn to my wife and I'm like, dude, it was like a scene out of Alien. Like, I'm exaggerating the speed, but my abdomen was like moving, like expanding.
What?
And fucking pain, Matt, was, oh my God, I've never experienced anything even close to what that was. So, you know, straight in the car, straight down to the hospital. Now, I'm in the back of BC in this little area called Maple Ridge. So the hospital was not the biggest, and we get in there just as the first cases of COVID are slowly starting to come through.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we're all scared at this point too. I mean, it's not like COVID now where we're kind of a bit blasé to it. But at the time, it was so scary.
No, I remember it was, nobody knew what it was, how sick it got you, if it meant you were going to die. Nobody was talking about comorbidities and shit like that. It was like, if you get it, you might die. And it was like the movie Outbreak. You're just like, what the fuck's going on? Yeah.
Dude, like you fucking go online and you'll see some news report from Beijing with a bunch of guys in hazmat suits just dropping dead. That's all I fucking knew.
Yeah.
So anyway, so here we are at the hospital. I get rushed in. I have an emergency like CT scan, And finally, after all this time, I have my first diagnosis. And I had, so the doctor was like pretty like, whoa. And he's like, man, what you're suffering from is a flare up from a condition called ulcerative colitis. And it's okay. A really aggressive one. So for those that don't know, ulcerative colitis is kind of in the Crohn's family. It's just a digestive issue in the large intestine. So I'm like, okay, how do we treat this? Mm-hmm. We're going to put you on. This is the last ditch attempt. We're going to put you on all of these drugs, these steroids, essentially. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, fingers crossed. So go home. And they put me on this intense amount of drugs.
Yeah.
Go home. By this stage, the world is shut down. Like yeah, it is yeah. COVID. And I'm taking all these drugs that are turning off my immune system. Mm-hmm. So now I'm even more scared because basically in a nutshell, what's happening in my large intestine is a bunch of overactive, you know, things with machine guns that are shooting the good bacteria and the bad bacteria. So these drugs are essentially turning that off to give my body a fighting chance to heal itself. But when you're dealing with a world pandemic where you've got this disease where you absolutely should, you know, have your immune system to fight it, if God forbid you would get it. So it was really scary. And I'm taking these drugs and I'm not getting better, man. And the pain at this point was like my wife has like crazy PTS because I was screaming every like half an hour. And I was in the toilet for like 100 times a day.
Oh my God.
I'm still 3 years on trying to put weight back on to where I once was, but I was beyond gone, man. Like I looked like a crypt keeper.
Are you able to eat throughout all this? Like what's going on with your diet?
Yeah, so I would eat and I could only eat a little bit. Like anything going down didn't hurt, but it was just once it started the process of digestion.
Yeah.
Once it would essentially hit the large intestine, like the last sort of piece of the, you know, the factory production line.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God, that was the part. And it just hurt so much. And so my body's natural response is trying to get this demon out of me as quickly as possible. Yeah. Hence why I'm on the bathroom. So.
Yeah.
And the only thing that took pain away was a hot bath. So I literally lived in the bath.
Wow.
And I just smoked weed and I just lived in the bath and hoped I got better. And I didn't. And then it was pretty obvious that I need to go back to the hospital because I couldn't keep any nutrients. I was dehydrated and I just looked like I was dying, which I was.
Mm-hmm.
So this time we go back and they were like, oh my God, you shouldn't have waited this long. Mm-hmm. Straight in. Now, I am kind of priority patient. Mm-hmm. Everybody in my ward was literally dying of COVID.
Yeah.
And it was really scary. And all my family are back in Australia. So aside from my wife. So they were terrified. No one could fly over and see me because of all the government, you know, red tape you would have to have in order to have the papers to come over. And I remember the nurse coming up to me and saying, from time to time, protocol at the hospital is we are now checking all the patients for the COVID signs, you know, temperature spikes, so on and so forth. So throughout your course of your staying here, you're going to be woken up and blah, blah. I'm fucking high as fuck. At this point.
What do they have you on? Just so.
Morphine or like, you know, the one where you sort of like hit. Yeah.
You got,
the
good stuff. You're on actual.
Good stuff.
Okay, good. Yeah.
And so, you know, in a sense, it was, I don't know. I mean, the silver lining there was it was kind of fun. I was up with the dragons most of the time anyway.
Yeah.
But one night I get woken up and I'd forgotten about that conversation. And, you know, I've got these four other beds with old people just like coughing COVID air all over.
Yeah, yeah.
And because it's a small hospital, they can't really prioritize me and some boy in the bubble situation.
Yeah, yeah.
So I get woken up and it's these two nurses and they're in these hazmat suits. And it's protocol, as I've mentioned, for them to check your temperature. Now, apparently behind the scenes, my doctor had told the nurses, hey, just say no, patient over here. Part of his condition is he's going to have these crazy temperature spikes. So don't be alarmed. It's nothing to do with COVID. He has no other symptoms. They either forgot that note or were so scared because of the pandemic.
Yeah.
So the first incarnation of those nasal swab things, the first one, apparently they didn't have much give. So they were essentially like little mini chopsticks.
Oh, boy. Yeah. Okay. And yeah.
I broke my nose when I was a kid playing rugby and I had a bit of a shitty kind of surgery. And so I've got my left nostril essentially can't really breathe that well out of.
Yeah, that's the same now. Same with me on my right. I broke my nose when I was like 11 or 12 and it's been fucked up ever since. Yeah.
Yeah. So I forgot about that in my morphine state. And they're like, oh, which nostril would you like us to swab you? And
oh,
like,
boy.
Oh, this one. Dude, they fucking shaklacky, and I hear this pop up, and it like went through cartilage that had just like formed over the years of just having, you know, your body's, I don't know, scar tissue reforming. This blood goes, shh. Two nurses look at each other like, what the fuck? We've never seen this happen. They freaked out. I'm high as a kite. I'm like, oh, this is hilarious.
Yeah.
So 2 hours go by, rapid testing, and they're like, Mr. Fisher, we're so sorry, but we're going to have to move you to the COVID ward. You actually are having a temperature spike. So now I'm starting to kind of come to, and the little button thing that I would normally use to be up there with the dragons to pretend that life's awesome is kind of wearing off. And the reality of being put into a
no.
pandemic, fast fucking COVID breath every bloody 2 seconds. And they're wheeling me down and like, don't worry, we're going to look after you. I go into this elevator, and man, it was like a scene out of a horror movie. The doors open up. And because, again, small hospital, they've kind of made like a makeshift COVID ward where there's like police tape kind of like this way with do not enter COVID and this way is fine. So that's the first thing I see, knowing that my immune system essentially is gone. And I'm like, okay. So they wheel me into this room. They're like, actually, this is actually going to be better for you because there's nobody else in here and you're going to have this whole room to yourself. So I go, all right, cool. So I go into the room. Dude, there's four beds, and the last, the last bed looks like someone had just died in it. Like the corner of the room, like beds made, beds fucking for sure not made. And then there's my bed that I'm meant to get into. So I'm just in my head like, oh, cool, I'm in a COVID spaceship. Someone for sure definitely passed away.
Yeah.
And, but you know, what can I do? And also too, nothing. Like,
you can't do anything in that situation. Yeah.
Not a thing. And so at this point, I'm kind of just like, all right, this is what it is. I just kind of got to ride this out. So the test that they did was just enough to see if you were potentially in the like risk area of maybe having COVID. But at all this stage, those first tests was still going to take 3 days to get an actual definitive answer.
Oh,
so
wow.
So this boy in the bubble, literal fucking coffin of death waiting. The first night, I make it through, and to cope, I like turn my room into kind of like the room Olympics for fun. So I was like, okay, well now, ladies and gentlemen, welcome. Now I'm going to hop over this sweatshirt. And I was, this is what I did all day long, just to stop myself going insane.
Did you get the happy pushback?
No, I didn't get that back at there because it was one of these things where I don't think anybody really thought I was going to be there for too long.
Okay.
But more patients, more COVID patients, and people dying kept coming in. And I'm hearing that at the night. I'm hearing like people like have these really wheezy kind of whooping cough situations, and then it would stop, and you're like, oh, that person's dead. Like it was just, you would mess
for
with
sure.
Your head.
Yeah.
So one night, this is where the story takes a crazy turn. One night of the three, the second night, make it through the first one, the second one, I go to get back into my bed after just going to the bathroom. That was one saving grace too. I did have my own private bathroom, so that was nice. But I'm also walking so frail. Like I'm just like barely getting in and out of bed. So I go to the bathroom and I come back. And as I go to sort of put myself, embrace, you know, put my weight onto my arm to put myself back into bed, I hear this like, again, pop, pop, pop. And this time, I had this sharp stabbing pain, this crazy, like, it was the weirdest pain in my right shoulder.
What the fuck?
I fall to the ground. Yeah, dude, exactly. And I have no idea what's going on. I have a little bit of painkillers in me, but not enough. I'm hitting the call button. Again, it's like 2 o'clock in the morning. It's taking forever for somebody to actually come. Eventually, a nurse does come. Oh, my God, she helps you back up. She's like, what happened? I explain the sound, explain the pain. Her fucking eyeballs kind of went just massive. She was like, oh no, like she knew something that I didn't. And she comes and gets a wheelchair, chucks me in the wheelchair, rushes me down, mask on, you know, gloves, all this shit, straight in, like past all these other people that were lined up for CAT scans, straight in. And my large intestine had fucking exploded and I was septic and I was dying.
Did she know from the shoulder though? Like what the hell is that?
Because it's fucking rare, but apparently sometimes like the air that's inside of you as it escapes kind of has to go somewhere. And but I think it was more the sound was the thing that triggered her to know, oh shit, Like, it was literally large intestine exploding. Like, pop, was it like just falling to pieces?
So you knew it was coming from down here, the sound. You like located the sound.
I didn't know. I honestly had no idea. Okay. It was this weird thing. It was like this kind of like, it's hard to say, like, oh, I heard it inside my body. But
right.
You don't really know. But yeah, I did hear the pops. So I get the CAT scan and I still don't know. They haven't told me anything. I only now know in hindsight looking back, but I don't know what's going on.
Right.
So then I'm getting wheeled like super fast. So I know something's fucked. I get wheeled into this surgical, into a, like a surgery room, surrounded like the Simpsons, man. Like there's all these like doctors just like looking at me. I'm fucking scared. I have no idea. No one's telling me anything. And I have this anesthesiologist who, man, like, talk about, again, pardon the pun, not listening to your gut. I just had, there was something off with him. Like, he just lacked confidence. And it's something that I think that if you're going to be in that area, you should for sure have fucking confidence, guy.
I mean, even if you don't, if you're an anesthesiologist, you need to pretend you do. You know what I mean? Like, that is a job that you can't be like, oh, okay, I think this is going to be, let's try it here. Like, that's not what anesthesiologists should be doing, you know?
And that was quite literally his demeanor. So I was like, I'm pretty, like, dude, he was like a fucking David Brent character or something. Like, he was like, oh, and he was just like doing these like weird jokes. I'm like, starting to feel nervous about this guy, but I don't know. I didn't want to hurt anyone's feelings or something. It was stupid. But anyway, so he's putting the epidural thing in my back.
Mm.
And I can hear him like fucking muttering himself.
Jesus.
Meanwhile, he's like fucking, you know, stabbing me with this like fucking sword in my spine.
And those hurt like, so bad. Yeah.
Yeah. It doesn't feel amazing, guy.
Yeah.
So he thinks he gets it.
Right.
He assures me that he does. And next minute I'm out. And last thing I remember is being sort of like tied down and kind of like laid down in like a Jesus Christ pose.
Okay. Yeah.
Come to, obviously a few hours later, having no idea what had happened. And I was flailing like crazy. The motherfucker didn't put the epidural in the right spot. So I woke up, apparently, I have no memory of this because they fed me fentanyl to calm me down.
Yeah.
But I woke up feeling the full wrath of being cut like, you know, 5 inches above and below my navel. So I'm like fucking flailing. Apparently I hit some nurse, obviously by accident. So at this time, I actually am quite literally tied down. And I remember looking over at my arm, being like, what the fuck? Like reality hit me very quick. Like adrenaline was rushing in.
Now,
I was being fed like drops, like water driplets of fentanyl. And they were monitoring me. Obviously, it's
my God. Wow.
So I don't know this. And I've got this one beautiful nurse who, you know, she's like Mother Teresa is like her head. like the fucking hospital, like surgical lights behind her. And she's feeding me. And I love her, man. I think about it all the time. She's feeding me these like little lollipops that are kind of like dipped in ice or have ice on them.
Okay.
And it's a soothing thing and it whatever worked to calm me down. So I have no idea what's happened. I'm out of it. The fentanyl is doing its job. I get wheeled into my room. I wake up probably, I don't know, 5 or 6 hours later, out of it, but you know, enough. And I'm in a lot of pain. And I'm fucking what the fuck? And I like pull the sheet back and I've got a shit bag, essentially a colostomy bag, duct taped, you know, strapped to my fucking belly. You know, I'm 39, about to turn 40. This is 3 years ago. So
Wait a second though. You didn't know what they were going to do to you? Like you didn't know what was wrong? Yeah. Nobody explained anything?
In hindsight, they may have done, but I was just on I was so out of it. And I was so focused on COVID then too. Like that was taking up all my bandwidth. I was just so scared of that.
Oh man.
And they may have done in their defense, you know, because it's pretty cruel to just march somebody in and cut them off.
It's not unheard of, but it is cruel.
Yeah, I'm sure it isn't. But I don't have any memory of them telling me. So I like saw that and got pretty upset, obviously, because it's just like your whole confidence as a young guy or youngish guy just disappears.
Yeah.
I didn't know if it was going to be with me forever or whatever. And this is just the initial feeling.
Mm-hmm.
So
what
happened was, to wrap this bit up, they had removed my large intestine and had to like, because obviously it's fucked, just some demon. They throw that in the trash. And then they literally like air blow dry you out. because there's
oh my god,
and like I'm like leaking gross shit all through my organs, everything's shutting down. So they
Got poison inside your body, right? That's what sepsis is, right? Yeah.
I had like a 30% chance of survival.
Oh,
and like this is all stuff I find out after the fact,
right?
And so I now have to live with this new situation. I'm in hospital for like 5 weeks.
Oh, my God.
This is day 4 or 5 of me being in hospital that I now have woken up to this. So I have a lot to get used to very quickly. Not going to get into like everything this entails for the obvious reasons. You can kind of do the math on that. But it was a very heavy blow. Then the next thing was because I was on all these steroids, it thins the skin and can make healing take a little that bit longer. Again, had no idea. So I had all these staples like up here. I can show the scars afterwards if you want, but I have all these staples up here. And they had to leave them in a little bit longer because of this. But then the skin started kind of growing over the staples.
Oh, God.
And I had this like, she was awesome. I do love her, but her bedside manner was maybe up for having a chat about because she was, you know, like she's like this like big, beautiful, like African woman that's like, you think this is hard in my country? So she's got that speech. So you can't, that speech is, you know, so.
Yeah.
And she's also fucking valid. Like that's fair. Okay. Yeah. I can put up with this little bits of pain considering some of the shit you've seen.
Right. Yeah.
But it fucking hurt so bad, man. Like ripping out all these staples. The last one, she rips it out. And dude, it's like a scene. It's fucking something. It's like a scene. Sorry. It's like a scene out of Alien. My stomach opens all the way back up again.
On the last one?
On the last one.
Oh my God.
At that point, you know, I'd been in hospital for like 4 weeks or whatever, like just going through the motions, trying to stay as sane as possible, asking for all the morphine, developing morphine addictions, having nurses either be the sweetest, kindest angels from above or just like fucking demons from the underground that don't
believe. Because
that's the other big thing that people don't talk about too is there's that stigma of like, oh, you know, you better not get an addiction to morphine. Or it's like, well, motherfucker, you're feeding me this amazing thing that makes my life manageable right now. Of course I'm going to get addicted to it. And you have to take that in consideration when you're taking a patient off this. And from my case, it was just like cut. And then I was back to being so much pain. So
anyway,
I make it to that point and I'm just like stoked because to me, that point marked I get to finally go home. At this point, my mom has got a special circumstances visa from the Australian government. And I didn't know this, but she was at home at my house here in Vancouver, in Maple Ridge, sorry, waiting for me. So mom was ready to be in nurse mode. Everyone's ready for me to come back and then I open up again. And that was probably one of the lowest points. But I also like, I just started laughing because I'm like, well, fucking, this is like a Monty Python sketch at this point. Like,
yeah, I was going to say, it's almost, obviously it's not because it's happening to you and it happened to you and it's real and you're a real person and that makes it not funny. But in isolation, it reads like comedy. You know what I mean? Like it plays as a comedy plays.
Yeah,
it's crazy.
I mean, 100%. And like, you know, I mean, I think it's one of the easiest ways to help get through something if you're fortunate enough to have that have a bit of a sense of humor to kind of, you know, quote Monty Python, look on the bright side of life. But so yeah, man. So it opens up and I just like fucking of course it is. They put the special vacuum thing on me, which it's basically fast tracks the healing process and I'm fine. I go home.
Okay.
Mom and I but it's COVID. I can't touch her. And that was really fucking hard because I'm really close with my family. I didn't I hadn't seen her at that point for like 1.5 years too.
Yeah.
But anyway, I something happened. I was like, okay, so what do I have to do now to fucking get better? Because this sucks. And also too, I want to pause to just say like there are still people that have, it's called an ostomy, the bag. Yeah. There's people that live with this still. So I'm not saying that it's not unmanageable. There's a lot of people that still function in society, but it was my initial blow to not knowing that was coming and then seeing it, it's a heavy thing to take for anybody in that moment.
My grandmother had, she's passed away now. She passed away in 2001, so a long time ago. But for the last 20 some years of her life, because she had colon cancer, so she needed that. She lived
Oh, really?
An actually totally normal life. Obviously, it was a nuisance, but Once she got used to it after years, it was was just her life, you know? Yeah. But yeah, I totally get where you're coming from. It's just like all of a sudden, you know, you're living your life, you're 40, you're virile, you're having a good time, and then suddenly you got a bag on you. You know, it's not great.
And I also, like, I'm a drummer and like touring. I was how am I gonna do it? I was so concerned because, you know, like it is an adhesive that sticks to your belly to keep it on. And when you sweat, well, that's the only the glue. So I'm just in my head all these scenarios. But again, I'm so thankful I went through this during COVID because there was no shows. There was no touring. The world was shut down. So it was kind of a blessing.
Right, right. Yeah, true. Yeah.
And yeah, so anyway, mum's here. I've been nursed back to health. And then my wife gets, who'd been studying for like 5 years, she works, funnily enough, in like public health. And because it was COVID, there was jobs. And, you know, all these kids go to university to try to get some, and then they fucking never get anything. All of a sudden, she's getting a great opportunity. Right. And that opportunity was going to take her like 12 hours away from me. And we spoke about it. I'm like, go. Because I need to learn to live with this by myself. Yeah. And I don't really, and she'd been through a lot, man. She'd been through so much of anger. Yeah. I was so angry.
Yeah.
So she left, and I thought I'd be like, cool, supportive husband about it. I was like, yeah, you go do you, baby. Godspeed. Yeah, I'll be fine. And the second she left, I'm like, oh, fuck. So, thank God mom was there. But so the Phoenix and the Ashes part of this story is afterwards, mum was meant to stay for like 6 months. And I was like, mum, it'd been two. I'm like, just go. I'm gonna learn what to cook. I'm going to do it all by myself. I'm like, I'm starting to be babied by you and I'm starting to rely on you too much. And that's really going to set me up for failure here.
Huh.
The whole thing that I did, that's probably the thing I'm the most, I guess, thankful that I had the foresight to know that, because I have seen other people that with certain things where they just, if you become too reliant on anybody, you're not going to get better. Like the more you sort of push yourself and test yourself, and at least for me, my mindset, I just knew, I'm like, you need to go. I need to do this by myself. So I lived in this huge house in the back, in the woods, essentially by myself. And I just figured it the fuck out. I built a studio and started just playing drums again slowly and got a bit better, a bit better. And this whole time, I have a vintage clothing store, which is what I'm in right now. And so things are starting to open back up again. And I had staff to run, and I just, dude, I was so thankful for it because it was such a distraction to, like, if you focus on the thing that's fucking your life is fucked. If you just kind of like can just pretend it's there, it seems to the universe kind of hands out a little sweet kind of like, you know, gift. So then I'm starting to do these drum things and I put these, I'm just like, what am I going to do? So I put drum videos on TikTok, like just to kind of like, just me playing drums to like video game music and orchestral songs out in drums, just being a silly goose. And this band called The Real McKenzies, which are like a pretty big, they're on like Fat Records. They all wear kilts, like a Scottish punk rock band. Weird, I know. They asked me to join their band and play drums around Canada and a tour around Europe. And I was like, fuck, I spoke with my doctor. I'm like, this is maybe pushing it a bit. So the healing journey, I wasn't quite ready for it.
Yeah.
But so I did, oh, fuck it. Well, let's do it. And I just... Man, I took diet so seriously, worked so seriously, and it's hard because you've got this area now that's missing anything, and any kind of like core exercise, you can get a hernia and you're straight back. It's kind of playing a delicate game. But I pulled it off. I toured around Europe. My life is pretty much back to normal. I can't really eat vegetables that are raw, like salads are done, because your body... my body can't break down that roughage. Yeah. So essentially you have to like try to have, you know, baby like substance food or texture. But you know, as long as you chew your food well, everything becomes baby food eventually. That's what
that is true. Yeah. That's what they always say, you know. That's the age old expression. Yeah. If you chew it enough, it always becomes baby food. Yeah.
They do say that. Check the back of Vegemite jars for evidence. That's pretty much the story in a
that nutshell. Is fucking crazy, man. And I'm just trying to, I mean, thinking, it doesn't take much for me to get there, but I think about the beginning of COVID and how fucking freaked out everyone was. Remember all the shit going on in Italy? Remember that? Yeah. Like, it was like, that was around January, February, and then into March, it was New York City. It was like, that was like end times shit, the visuals that we were getting on online and on TV. It was like, No one knew what the fuck it was. And you're obviously aware of all this. And then on top of that, you are like, no one could need a hospital more than you needed a hospital at that time. So like, there's no way around it. You were going to die unless you were there. Yeah. Right. Yeah. And to just be stuck there for weeks on end, then to have this external thing on you that is totally, again, you said people live with it. It's not going to kill you, but it is something that for a younger person to have to, in a flash, immediately have to adjust to that is a huge fucking deal. So what happened with the bag? Like, did you?
Are you okay with scars? Like, are you?
Yeah. Oh yeah, no. Viewers,
if you want to, I can show you because it can kind of.
Yeah. If you don't mind, I would love to see. Yeah.
I just like pull my dick out.
God.
So, this is where I was cut open.
Wow.
Because of how it opened back up again, I healed really weird. So on the side, I'm kind of like a McDonald's M. It's really hard to see, but it goes in like it.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah. But
here. Sorry to gross everybody out.
No, it's not here, gross.
This is where my intestine was like hanging out of my body.
Wow. Right.
And so that was a year. That was a year and a half. And man, you know, I just kind of like did the Buddhist thing. Like I would sit on my deck and, you know, I'm here in Canada where, thank God, they've got a very open-minded, I mean, you're the same with weed in California.
Yeah.
So I would just go to the dispensary and, you know, this is the other thing too. I mean, my God, the amount of fucked up drugs that my doctor was like, oh, you should take this and this. And nah, man, if I can not do that, I won't. So I would just sit on my deck and I'd roll a joint and I would just talk to my trees. I had these two trees called the two Steves. Hey, Steve, how you doing? Oh, pretty good. we just killed me and the Steves. And I would just kind of like learn. And I learned so much about my body in that process and the connection. This is something that was very mind-blowing to me. And it's very, very real. It's not some hippy-dippy bullshit. There's absolutely a connection between gut and mind. And like that saying, listen to your gut, there's 100% truth to that. And
that
deep-rooted feeling that we have when something's off, if you ignore it, I do think there's punishment coming.
That expression absolutely comes from somewhere. Someone didn't just willy-nilly make that shit up. That is, you feel it.
Yeah.
And if you follow it, it'll usually lead you to the right place. I mean, sometimes, obviously, it's not like it has this elaborate way of breaking down problems and seeing through them. So sometimes it's not the best thing to follow your gut. But in situations where it's like fight or flight, generally speaking, that is the thing to listen to. Yeah, you're right.
I guess that is the caveat. Like for sure, like those very kind of like, you know, primal instincts that you sort of have for the most part, you pay attention to. So man, it was definitely a crazy ride. I'm very thankful to have like amazing nurses and, you know, but I have kids. So when this was happening, I had some really sweet people here in Vancouver that, in the scene that I've sort of grew up playing in punk rock bands in, and they put together a telethon for me and raised a bunch of money, which was very, very sweet and made me cry for 4,000 years. And that really helped the last part. Cause that happened when I was in hospital and it was just like, hey, surprise motherfucker. And I was like,
wow, dude, that's some fucking good people right there. Good for you.
It was unbelievable. I'm still in awe of those people. I'm very thankful for it because it very much helped me. But there's a lot of people that the hard thing is too, is for young people that, and a lot of, like I said, a lot of people are stuck with this or in your grandmother's case, whether it's a condition after cancer and blah, blah, blah. The stigma, because it's related to poo.
It's such
a like a subject that nobody wants to bring up and it's gross. Person that's going through that, of course, they fucking know that too, motherfucker.
I know.
Kind of people that were so, I think that was one thing that I was like, wow, like the complete ignorance to not take a moment to think about how your fucking comment here could make me feel. Like,
yeah.
But I just started getting the courage to sort of go out into public again. And I was always very cautious in those early days of the wind blowing, like during summer, because obviously, it looks like I've got a gridiron.
Right. It tightens up your, yeah.
So a lot of very loose Nirvana shirts during that period. The 90s is in here. But, you know, this wind blew against and this girl who was sort of like coming with me, she's like, oh, gross, you see that guy's belly? And it's just like,
Wow.
You know, that's what shitty people do. They say shitty things, but just that it, I'd never been in a situation where I was on the receiving end of that level of dumb and ignorance. And so that was like, and I thought I'm strong enough to that just kind of, you know, sting a little bit, but go off the off my back. But some little kid, some 13-year-old dude going like that. So I did a podcast telling this story because a lot of kids, a lot of my friends wanted to know the story, and I was sick of telling it over and over again.
Yeah.
I don't mind now, but at the time, it was everybody wanted to know. So I just really for my friends and family, I just put it on Spotify, and it kind of got a little bit of traction. Mm. Somebody shared it on a Facebook group for people that have this.
Mm.
I had parents reach out to me, wanting to talk to their kids, and that was really sweet. And I'm always happy to do that too. If anybody's watching and they've got somebody going through it or they're going through it, because a lot of people that have either Crohn's or ulcerative colitis, and this surgery is scheduled. It's going to happen at some point. For a lot of people, if it does take and you reconnect the pipes and essentially the intestine that was hanging out of my body is now my asshole. So
that's good.
If that all kind of works and heals well, like I said, your life more or less goes back to normal. But for a lot of people, it's a real roll of the dice. If anyone you can hit me up. I don't know.
That's good of you. It's to someone, anyone who hasn't who has something ahead of them health-wise that they know is going to be arduous or painful or potentially, in this case, you know, embarrassing or life-changing in a totally detrimental way, it's always scarier and worse on your way toward that than it is on the other side of getting on the path toward healing, you know? It's good. Anybody out there that needs to, you know where to go. Man. Kirby, that is a crazy story. Thank you for sharing it.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Wow. I'm going to be thinking about some fucked up shit the rest of the day. Okay. I'll be checking my gut, seeing if my intestines is poking out or anything like that.
One thing I will say for anybody, blood in the stool, do not take any fucking doctor just brushing that off. I have now learned that every single time a doctor or a medical person that has any integrity should always recommend you for a scan or blood work or both. And if they don't, you insist on it. Because if I had insisted on it earlier, I might not have gone through this hell ride. So,
I mean, that is good advice. Take that advice. That is good advice. All right, Kirby. Well, I appreciate you. Thank you for coming on the show. I'm glad you're doing well. You got a lot of energy. Clearly you're all better. And I'm thankful for that. So good on you.
Thank you so much. Have a great
day. Take care. You too.
Bye. Look.